on this episode of Upcoming Attractions, we've got trailers for The Bubble and Bullet Train, plus our film discussions for The Batman, Uncharted, and Licorice Pizza. All that and more on Upcoming Attractions. G'day, gang. We're back with another action-packed episode of Upcoming Attractions. As always, I'm your host, Matt Vella, and with me, as always, to talk about the latest film trailers and films that are released that we love to just talk and appreciate and talk shit about. As always, with my co-host, Jesse. Jesse, how you doing, mate?
G'day, Matty. I'm good, thanks, mate. How are we, guys? How we doing?
Stoked, pumped, and ready to rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And as always, also, Adrienne, how are you doing, AD?
I'm fantastic and I'm so ready to get into everything today. Like, it's going to be a big one.
This is a big one. We've got two major blockbusters to tackle, but it's also going to be we're going to try and make this a short one because we are filming under a bit of a pump right now. But before we start, I want to give a shout out to 80, congratulations on your new side podcast, I'd say.
Aww, the Laughing Scots. Thank you so much.
For those who don't know, tell us about the mistress you're cheating on us with.
Well, the secret's out now. No, that's actually, Esther. So myself and our friend Esther, we actually created this podcast about maybe just over a year and a couple months ago, and it just took a long time for it to get off the bat. But we're sort of like your unfiltered, no drama best friends who just want to talk shit with you, or talk shit into your ears, you know, on your drive home or in the morning. And we just explore pretty much everything, life, dating, food, pop culture, you name it. So that's what we do. And actually, we would love to do a collab one day with Upcoming Attractions. I think that'd be really fun.
We'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. Yeah. It's all love. It's all family here. It's actually the reason, it's part of the reason this podcast exists, because when Midnight Double Feature split from Upcoming Attractions and I had to find co-hosts, I was like, who the fuck do I get? I know Jesse was always keen to start a podcast, so I called him. And then I called you saying, look, I know you tried to start a podcast a year ago. I know you bought the equipment, but you haven't released anything in like a year. Are you still doing that? Because I could use a co-host. And you were like, it'll probably happen one day. And so what is it, like 6 months later, and we're, I think this is episode 12 or 13.
Six months
you're finally out
there.
That's crazy. It's something about that, I would say.
Yeah, it is.
Because we took about 2 or 3 months to get the podcast up and running.
So it took so long to get equipment and shit for it.
A lot of shit. Yeah. We did a bunch of test episodes. In fact, guys, today is our first episode recording with the new system. We did a test one yesterday, which we'll probably see the light of day sometime soon. Who knows?
It will. It was a good one.
So it was a good one. And hopefully this is a problem-free episode. Because we've had a lot of problems on the back end, a lot of technical issues. So we apologize that some of the episodes coming out a bit later than they should. But we're here to rock and roll. So let's get into it. Let's go straight into trailers, shall we?
Let's do it.
First of all, Brad Pitt is back, baby.
He's back with this.
Very stoked. This trailer called Bullet Train. Adrienne, what did you think of this one?
I love Brad. I don't care what anyone says. I think he's insanely underrated and he's way more than just a pretty face. I will watch anything he does. And this, it's sort of like, it looks like a comedic John Wick style, you know, like, oh my God, I'm just so excited. I'm really keen. It made me laugh and it had me really intrigued with some of the sequences we got to see. Plus the cast is epic.
Yeah, Jesse, anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, I've always really, really liked Brad Pitt. You know, he's been in some of my all-time favorite movies, and I always think he's a very talented actor. And yeah, I'm very keen. As AD said, it looks like a very John Wick-esque kind of action flick, but there's also comedic moments peppered in. Yeah, I'll probably go and say this. It looked great cast. I'm kind of curious. I don't really understand fully what it was about. I guess it was he's like robbing something, or he's some sort of secret agent or something like that.
There's something going on with a briefcase.
Yeah.
I believe everybody on the train are trying mm-hmm. to get it.
Yes.
From what I can tell. But look, we keep mentioning John Wick. There's a reason why it feels like John Wick. This Same is director? Directed, sort of. it's directed by David Leitch, who was, I believe, co-director of the first John Wick.
Yeah.
And that would make since so then, much he's starting to become one of my favorite action directors of recent years. Like, a lot of his films aren't like perfect, but the action scenes are great. So I'm just gonna I'll give you an idea. He did John Wick, the first one, then he did Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2, and he did Hobbs and Shaw. He also did, you might have seen it, maybe not, there was a bit of a viral video called Brawl, and it was like a kind of like a promo video for Apple showcasing what you could do with the iPhone 11.
Yeah,
and it was like about snowball fighting between some kids.
Okay,
and yeah, obviously awesome. The reason the action was so well directed is because it's the John Wick guy. So yeah, so like cool. And like, look, the camera movement, the way it moves with the action, like that scene where they're at the chair, at the table and chair, so well done. Clearly, this guy knows how to do action. Looks like Zazie Beetz will also be appearing in this, who he's worked with before. The guy in the beginning, Brian Tree Henry, I believe his name's pronounced, he's also great. I don't know if he's going to be in it much, but he did some voice work in Spider-Verse. He was in Widows. He was also he's known as Paperboy in Atlanta, which is an amazing show. Season 3 is coming out soon. And I think it was in Godzilla vs. Kong too. So
he's just not top billed or anything,
but I just love him.
Oh, I have to quickly jump in as well. Like, one of my favorite elements of the Bullet Train trailer too was the cinematography. And I just took a look, and it's Jonathan Cielo, who's also collaborated with David Leitch a few times on the first John Wick and Deadpool 2. And that also makes so much sense as to why the whole thing feels like it's, I don't know, like one of his babies. Like, I'm really, really excited. It was just stunning to me.
It looks very stylish.
Super stylish, yeah.
Yeah, which I'm quite surprised seeing Brad Pitt in something like this, because I feel like he hasn't done this kind of thing in quite a while. He picks usually more serious projects, I think, and he's doing a lot more fun popcorn-type flicks and action projects now. Like, we had The Lost City last week and got this one, which is good. It's good to see him back in these kind of roles. So,
actually, that's probably my biggest takeaway. I can't believe Brad Pitt's doing a movie like this. I'm excited for it. I figured it would be something he's not very interested in. I guess doing that fight scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood maybe got him a little excited, going all Bruce Lee. Was that him against Bruce Lee? That was him, right?
Yeah, it was.
So a lot of people got excited.
A lot of people complained about that.
They did, and maybe rightly so, but it was still a good scene. I love these movies. I love these action movies set in Japan, like the neon lights. Mm. It's so beautiful. I don't know if you guys have seen, there's a movie on Netflix called Kate.
Yes, I was just about to say, this gives me huge Kate vibes. I watched it about 2 weeks ago. I really loved that movie. I thought it was incredibly, I don't know, underrated and not spoken about enough, but I definitely got Kate vibes from this trailer.
Yeah, me too, actually. Just Japan just has that look, and it's really cool. So, yeah, really excited for this movie. It comes out kind of soon. I think it's July. Yeah, July.
Yeah.
So this might be – I feel like once a year, at least once a year, we get like – if we don't get a John Wick, we get a John Wick-like. Like last year we got Nobody, and a couple of years ago we got Atomic Blonde. I love this new genre of action film John Wick has sort of birthed, because it's – it's really taken action to a new level. And then when you see like a boring shootout in a film, like it makes badly directed action movies look bad, because now you've got something to like compare it to, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, like that's...
I was feeling like as well that I don't think it's going to be as full-on action-packed as something like John Wick and Nobody as well. I think it's going to be a more of a thriller aspect to it, a smart thriller aspect to it, so which I'm down for. So it's not a carbon copy of those movies either. So
yeah. Look, I think the setting is really cool. If they're going to mostly have this set on the train, what's really hard to write, I think. So you guys know my first short film that I put in a festival circuit was an action film.
Yes.
And ever since then, I've been like, how do I make a better action?
Shout out to Bleeding Backs.
YouTube at youtube.com/VelomatFilms, Bleeding Backs. Since then, I've been like, how do I make a better action film with no budget? So if I can't afford proper explosions and stuff. And something I've been learning is writing action is actually really hard because the best action scenes are, sorry, a bad action scene is when it's story, 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 stop for a fight scene, story, 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 where the plot does not accelerate through the action scene. And that's very easy to write like that. But to do it like have the plot moving as well, like maybe it's a chase scene or maybe it's like someone's trying to get something, the other person has to stop them. That's very hard to create those pressure cook situations. And when you look at some of the better action movies, like something like Speed, right? Speed is an amazing concept for an action movie. You're on a bus. If it stops, everybody dies. So if you're constantly moving, you look at a movie like Crank starring Jason Statham, where he's got to keep, the second one's Electricity. The first one is he's got to, what is it? The second one, he's...
Hang on, it's escaping me.
He's got to keep his adrenaline up. That's right.
That's the first
crank, he's got to keep his adrenaline up. If his heart rate lowers too low, he will die. So he has to constantly be either having sex or punching people or doing drugs. generally, it's killing people.
Is that serious? I haven't seen him.
It's an amazing... Yeah. It's one of the best
iconic
action...
film.
I haven't seen it in years, but it was amazing. Generally,
and he talks like this.
There's two of them, and they both have random cameos by Chester of Linkin Park. I don't know why he just happened to like that franchise, but they're great. But generally, like, he's always got to like speed in his car to keep his heart rate going or whatever. And his whole goal is like, I'm going to die because eventually I have to go to sleep. But before I die, I'm going to kill this one dude who did this to me. And it's like, fuck yeah, it's such a good, but Bullet Train, think about it. It's a train it's the fastest train in the world. It's an enclosed space. It's a great setting for fight scenes, action scenes, adrenaline. But I think the only problem is like there's an end to a train. So also it's got progression. If you guys have seen what's that Chris Evans movie? They made a show about it.
Snowpiercer.
The narrative.
I was going to say that it looks like that as well.
Yeah.
Like the narrative in Snowpiercer is based on the train. You start here, you end here. You're walking through the train. I don't know if this is going to be the same thing, but there's a lot of opportunity for that. I feel like it's a really great setting for an action film. So shout out to the Bullet Train. Now you've got me thinking, who's the writer of this? I want to pull it up real quick, guys. Who is the writer of this? Is it someone I trust?
Hopefully.
Oh, it's based on a novel, but the screenplay is. This guy's did a lot of produce. The only screenplay credit this person has is they did Fear Street Part 2, 1978.
All right, cool. Well, that was a great movie. So I'm keen.
This guy also produced Lights Out. That was a good movie. So
okay. I loved Lights Out.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yes, that's
good. Lights Out is amazing film. That guy actually, he has a YouTube channel and like it's really good. He like talks about how like screenings work, like audience tests work and stuff. And yeah, really
cool. That's so
cool. Moving on though to our next one for today, we're going to talk about The Bubble, directed by Judd Apatow. This movie seems kind of crazy. AD, what are your thoughts on The Bubble?
Yeah, crazy. I was not expecting pretty much anything in that trailer. I hadn't even read about it. So when I watched it, it was a blind watch. And I am just incredibly happy at the fact that it's an Apatow family affair. His daughter is in it, and his wife, Leslie Mann, who's one of my favorite comedians in all of Hollywood. I've loved watching her career just get better and better with every decade. It's amazing. And the premise is just wild. The fact that it's oh my God, like every – I don't know. I don't even know like what word to describe, but it looks crazy.
Describe the premise for people who haven't seen the trailer for us.
Okay, so I don't want to mess this up. Basically, it's set on a film set of a huge action franchise that's filming on its whatever film, like in the series, and a virus breaks out, and it's like a... It's set in England, and they all are sort of going crazy because they can't leave the film set. So that's basically what it's about. And it's just wild. Also, Benedict Cumberbatch is in it as well, which I thought was really cool. Was not expecting to see his face pop up, even though it's sort of in a really weird way.
Actually, I think it's not him. I think it's a deep fake.
That's what I thought it was.
It is a deep fake, but I feel like that might lead up to something like a bit of a like a random cameo for him, because I don't know.
Oh yeah, it's probably like setting up a punchline that'll pay off.
Yeah, I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, it was just random.
We're calling it now. It's a prediction.
Yeah. What did you guys think?
I mean, I it looked okay. It looked very, very nutty, very nutty. Not a typical Judd Apatow film I'm used to seeing. I'm used to seeing him do more of the Seth Rogen-y type of comedy film. But it looked okay. Like some parts I had a bit of a chuckle, but it looked very nutty. It looked very nutty. Very, very crazy. I love the references to coronavirus, and I love movies set on film sets where they're trying to create a film. I don't know. I don't think the trailer sold me on the movie, but I'll wait and see how it pans out and is received. But it's got an insane cast, pretty diverse cast there. Yeah.
Yeah, sort of touch what you went on, what you sort of mentioned. This looks like the type of film Judd Apatow would produce, not direct. Like he tends to direct more grounded character stories that aren't as whack in your face. But he's produced like 100 movies like this. Like,
yeah, he has.
They'll often star, you know, your Will Ferrells or Seth Rogens or whoever's. So to see him direct again something this wacky is kind of cool. Like for him, he could do this in his sleep. He does this all the time. But yeah, with such an awesome cast, like Pedro Pascal, Karen Gillian in the lead roles, and Keegan-Michael Key, you know he's going to crush it. This looks really funny, but I will say there are no particular jokes that really got me laughing. But this movie's going to be rated R. So
yes,
apparently so. And it's going straight to Netflix. So they're probably hiding a lot of jokes, but who knows? Yeah. Like the problem I'm having with Netflix movies now is that more than I would say 70% of Netflix movies feel like they weren't good enough for cinema, so they sold it to Netflix.
Yeah.
And as long as there's a big name attached, Netflix will buy it. Hell, sometimes if there's not a big name attached, Netflix will fucking buy it anyways, because they just want to have all the movies, you know?
Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw. It's a perfect example, you know? So, but, you know, every now and then you get some good ones. Like I look at something like Extraction is, again, another John Wick type film. That's one of the better action films I've seen in the last few years. You know, that wasn't a huge blockbuster. And that was a Netflix film. Like, it feels like they're either going for Oscars or going for the junk bin, you know, the junk pile. It's very rarely the in-betweens. But there was a comedy movie that came to Netflix last year called Coffee and Kareem, which I thought was pretty funny. It got terrible reviews, but I liked it. Sorry, Adi, you want to say something?
I'm going to keep the faith in the fact that due to the rating that, they're concealing a lot of the jokes. Because there's nothing worse than when the three good lines in the movie were in the trailer. So I think it was definitely crazy enough to pull me in to want to see it, even though, like nothing had me like particularly on the floor. I was just sort of like left with my jaw open, like, what did I just see? So hopefully it's going to be mind-blowingly hilarious when we do see it.
Well, it's better than those comedy movies where all the best jokes are literally in the trailer, and then you watch and you're like,
disappointed.
I put all the best bits in the trailer? What?
Where's the rest of the movie? Well, I'd say the only thing worse than that is when they have different jokes in the trailer. Like, sometimes they'll have like alternate takes.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing The Other Guys, and there was like a joke that was in the trailer, but in the movie, they changed the line. Yeah. And I remember thinking it was funnier in the trailer than it was in the movie. But yeah.
Oh. That's one of the few Will Ferrell movies I actually really like.
I love Other Guys.
That's a good one.
He's very hit and miss for me, but that's one of the few movies.
That opening scene when they just straight up kill themselves jumping off the building, I think I cried at last.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was amazing.
So good.
Anyways, I think it's time for some film reviews, some film discussions.
Yes.
So let's get into it. Spoiler alert. The following film discussions will contain spoilers. The Batman, Licorice Pizza, and Uncharted. If you don't want to be spoiled, be sure to check the time codes in the description below. This is your spoiler warning. You've been warned. Ladies and gentlemen, The Batman is upon us. Oh boy, this has been a long time coming. After all the stuff that went down Batfleck and Ben Affleck, it felt like we were never going to get a Batman movie. And then we got something really, really special. Let's get into it. Jesse, I saw this with you in the cinema.
Yes, we saw it together.
What are your overall thoughts on The Batman?
I thought it was brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought all the actors brought their A game. Robert Pattinson, I felt, worked really well as Batman. And I liked the fact, I know you had a problem with this, Matt, but I liked the fact that it was more of a detective noir story compared to a superhero story. Because
I love that, actually.
I've said before, Batman is one of the few superhero movies that I can watch and enjoy. I can't really enjoy other superhero movies, except for maybe Deadpool. I can enjoy Deadpool because it's more of a comedy. So I like the fact that it was more detective, more noir, which is my sort of thing. And I was really digging it. Gave me like the Riddler gave you Zodiac vibes with the you know, the letters and the encryptions and the mask. And I enjoy all the performances. The only thing I'd say as a criticism for me is it was too long. And I know people have said no, you know, it flies past. It's not long at all. It was too long. They could have cut other scenes with the Riddler. I thought they could have cut out. And then there were one or two scenes with Batman and Catwoman. I thought they could cut out as well. So it's just a bit too long for me. I thought they could have just sliced it down a bit. And then one of the other weird things is you almost only see Batman. You very rarely see Bruce Wayne. Robert Pattinson is Bruce Wayne. He's almost always Batman. Which I don't have a problem with. It's fine, but it's kind of interesting because usually you get when you saw the Dark Knight movies, I felt like it was more 60% Batman, 40% Bruce Wayne. Whereas in here, it's 90% Batman. But yeah, just something interesting to note, I felt. But I loved the cinematography, the tone. It was very gritty and dark. It's the darkest and grittiest Batman I think we've gotten. I still wouldn't put it as high as the Dark Knight. I still think that's the best Batman movie ever made. But it's really high up there. It's a really, really solid film, I felt. So
yeah, if you want to check on TikTok, I posted my personal rankings of the Batman films. I put The Batman as my number two. I rewatched Dark Knight the other day, and I do think there's a lot of aspects that I prefer. If you are comparing them, like, you just can't beat Heath Ledger's performance at the end of the day. And that type of film, I think, is also a bit more accessible, which is my biggest criticism of this film. Well, it's actually not really a criticism. It's just a note. It's, I think, for people who like a dark and gritty story, this is really good, or a detective story. But I think for mainstream audiences who are used to watching like a Marvel film where it's light, it's funny, it's got fast pacing, it's a four-quadrant film that's built for that's trying to appeal to so many people, this movie digs its heels in and goes, no, this is what the fuck I am. This is what the story is, and take it or leave it. And for people who want something that's like that, they're going to love it. But if you're used to something a bit more light, this movie is not for you. Sorry, Jesse.
Sorry, just one more thing just before we pass it over to 80. The only other criticism I have as well is I wish it was MA, which is R in America. I wish there was I felt like it kind of cut away a bit from the violence. I wish it just, you know, put the boot down and just went for that blood and a bit of violence. Or, you know, it felt drawn back a bit. And I get it because it's more accessible to a wider audience. I understand that. But I wish I reckon it would have been to the movie's benefit if they just went with that bit of extra violence, grittiness, instead of just cutting away. But overall, this is just real nitpicky complaints.
Yeah. I think I don't see Warner Brothers ever willing to do that for Batman, just because at the end of the day, they want to sell toys. But to your point, they're halfway there. Like, this film gets, like, some of those Riddler scenes, like with the phone, they're so torturous and psychologically fucked up. I would argue, like, some of those scenes are way worse than showing a little bit of blood or a dismemberment. Like, I saw a lot of like Mortal Kombat video games as a kid. I turned out fine, but you show me something where someone is it's debatable. But when you show like some of the psychological helplessness like some of these victims have, I'd say that is way more like mentally scarring than a little bit of blood or some boobs here and there or something. AD, I will come to you soon, but I'm holding you off because I have a feeling on some of your comments, but I could be wrong. So I'm just gonna quickly dive into some of my thoughts, just touch on what Jesse said. I love the cinematography in this. I love how stylized it is. I will say I did not love the car chase. I think it was interesting to see how they did the lock. Yeah, okay. I don't love the way how it was really dark. At times, I had trouble sort of telling what was going on. You're talking about the one with the
penguin, right? You're talking about I love that. I thought it was fantastic.
Well, I think it's great that I did it practically, but Nolan also did a car chase practically in Dark Knight. And with that, I was more aware of spatial awareness.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's cool that, he locked a camera under the car, but like, I feel like 50% of it was that. And it sort of bogged it down for me. I feel like it was during the daytime and it was better lit and they had a few more shots, I would have enjoyed it a bit more. It was still great. I'm like nitpicking here, right? Because I love this movie. This is my second favorite Batman movie ever. But that one could have been a bit better. But what I will say to compliment that, this has the best fight scenes in any Batman movie ever. Hands down, it comes nowhere close.
Adrian cringing there.
Hear me out, all right? In most Batman movies, he has such a stiff suit. He can't flex. He can't even turn his head. And I would say that's one of my big criticisms of most Batman films is the action scenes are usually not that great. Now, some of them in this movie I feel like are a bit too short and I would have liked them to be a bit longer. But when I could see his fluid motion, he's doing kicks and he's fighting, I buy it. You know, I'm a little bit more entertained. I want to touch on one more compliment before I throw to you, Adrian. Another thing I love about this movie is, so generally speaking, I don't like Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is, I get the point of him. He tries so hard to put on, like his mask is Bruce Wayne, not Batman. He tries so hard to be this perfect, normal person. He's like an investment banker type guy where he's like super perfect and put together that it, you know, it's secretly his eyes are dead and he could be a serial killer, which is probably why Christian Bale did such a great job. But I just don't find Bruce Wayne very relatable. He's a billionaire and he's also the world's best detective and martial artist and he's bad at nothing. I just find a very unrelatable character. So I love Batman, but I hate Bruce Wayne. But in the Batman, they're like sort of fuck all that. First of all, the Batman gets a riddle wrong. And I was like, oh, that's nice for a change. But the main thing is he's a broken man. He's depressed, he's emo, and yeah, it makes a bit of a depressing film, but it makes it more believable because I'm like, because when they set up some scenes where it's like he acts like he doesn't care if he dies. And so he goes in and the stakes are a little bit higher for me now because he's going in like he's this unhinged billionaire who can do whatever the fuck he wants. And when he goes to fight, I have a feeling, yeah, he could lose this fight. He could fuck up because he's just unhinged. He's not stable mentally. And when you see like Alfred sort of like worrying about him, every Batman movie has a scene where Alfred worries about Bruce. But this is the first time for me where it like I really buy it because I'm worried about Bruce too. He's clearly unstable. He's not okay up there, you know? And that makes him, I think, my favorite Batman because one, it's a bit more interesting. And two, it weirdly raises the stakes a bit. Now, I don't know if that'll be the same case moving forward because by the end, he's got a bit more hope in him and stuff. But I really like that aspect of this film. Adrian, what are your thoughts on the Batman?
Okay. I just want to start with there was plenty I liked about it. There was. But I'm going to go through that first and then go through what was lacking for me because this was my most anticipated movie of 2022. So I was extremely, extremely, like I was literally screaming in the car on the way there. I could not wait to go and see this. I went to three different cinemas until I got a seat with my sister. So really, really excited, packed house. And so what I loved, I don't know, for some reason when I say my opinion on this, people assume somehow that like I haven't been like researching the crap out of it. I loved that it was neo-noir. I was wanting that Joker version of Batman that we got, you know, really, really incredibly dark, gritty, almost depressing and disturbing. Like Joker left me for like a couple of weeks feeling really kind of violated. And that's what I was hoping to get out of this film. And I did like the fact that Gotham had that portrayal. I thought that was pretty perfect. Like hit it on the head. I did love the cinematography. That was probably my favorite aspect technically of the film. My favorite shot was at the end of the chase scene with the upside down shot of Batman coming towards Penguin. I did really enjoy that.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That was that really shot. Cool. Yeah. Like that was straight up my favorite. I did though. There was one shot that I thought was super cheeseball, which was where we had the GoPro style on Batman's head when he had just jumped off. I don't know. That just really was weird for me. It was really, it looked a bit cheap compared to the rest of the film, but I really liked.
There was a couple of those in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right.
Just random.
Didn't lock them
either. Like super random.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I think it is good to mention the problem with also any superhero movie, and I feel like Batman has the worst case of this, is whenever you get him doing something normal, And if you don't film it in a real stylized, cool way, it can look goofy as fuck.
Yeah,
and
totally.
There are a couple shots where it's like when he's walking into a detective scene, sometimes he looks really cool, but then sometimes it's like, oh, there's a guy in a Halloween costume here.
Yeah, so yeah. Oh, 100%.
The GoPro shot is probably the worst offender.
Me the worst offender. It may have been the first moment that took me out of that constant, like, I was visually pleased the whole time. Like, even if there were dips for me, I at least was intrigued the entire time by that. But that one, like, really threw me off. It was so random. But after the cinematography, my next favorite thing was definitely the casting. For me, Colin Farrell stole the show. I actually completely forgot that it was even him. I completely spaced on it the whole film. He was amazing and one of my favorite villains I've seen in a long time, one that we haven't seen in a really long time either. Loved him. And Zoe Kravitz, I really loved her as Catwoman. I think she's so badass and just she fits the bill perfectly. I suppose they're like my favorite things about the film. So I was really, really keen because Matt Reeves directed two films I love, 10 Cloverfield Lane and Let Me In. And I was really excited for things to get dark and suspenseful and intense. And it just didn't get there for me. Like, I thought that the script was lacking for a lot of the time. Like, I felt like maybe Robert Pattinson didn't have that much to work with and neither did Paul Dano because I love both of them a lot and I really, really respect them as actors. I think with Rob, he sort of, I don't know like how it came about, but for me, he played one tone for the entire film. And similarly to what one of you said earlier, where it's like you mostly see Batman and not enough of Bruce, maybe that is where I felt I was not able to connect to him or root for him. Usually, like with any other Batmans, like you're like, fuck yeah, you know, like you do this. Well, I just didn't really care about him at all. I felt like he was the least intriguing part of the film for me. And I love him. I love Rob. Absolutely adore him. I don't know. I just felt really let down by his performance. And then I felt like with Riddler, Paul Dano, sometimes when it was like finally screen time for him, his scenes dragged on a bit too much and it made them really awkward and a bit laughable sometimes. And I've said this before, he's, I think, one of the best actors of his gen. He's incredible. But there were some points where I wanted to be as disturbed as I was with Joaquin Phoenix as Joker and it just felt a bit farcical to me. And I feel like he was let down somehow because I've never seen a performance of his that I wasn't blown away by. I don't know, maybe it was him being really choppily exposed throughout the film and then having large breaks in between. Not sure, but there were a lot of people in my cinema who did laugh, which really pissed me off because I hate when people do that and they're not supposed to, but other people sort of felt it too. For me, I just found that there was little emotional journey from Batman and maybe even from Riddler as well. And I just couldn't connect to them. And then I just felt like it played it too safe. Like Jesse said, the fight sequences for me were few and far between and really short-lived. I was so keen to see Batman beat the living shit out of people. Like I wanted to see all of it, you know, like make me not able to sleep at night. And it just didn't happen. So I was like waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's sort of like, I don't know, the movie for me was like going to my favorite restaurant, ordering my favorite dish, and all the ingredients were there. They were all cooked pretty well, but there was no flavor. And I was really upset by that. So the lack of action, the fighting, I thought it was frustratingly safe and it left me pretty bored for the most part. And like no one has to explain to me anymore that it's neo noir, blah, blah. I totally get it. That's what I wanted though. Mm. So you know what? I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to give it a second watch. I don't know. I feel disappointed. Unfortunately, on an emotional level. So, yeah.
Look, the Riddler comment I'm hearing a lot of people saying the same thing. Personally, I never felt that way, obviously, except some people laugh when like it reveals that while preparing, he was like doing a sort of a back-end YouTube type thing. Obviously, that might get a few laughs, but I never felt that way personally, but I understand a lot of people else felt that way, so fair enough. You had a comment about how I feel like there wasn't enough Bruce and stuff, and I actually leaned over to Jesse maybe 30 minutes into the film, and I was like, it's weird how little Bruce we're getting.
Yeah.
Because at first that's how I felt, but what I love and what I love about this movie is it sort of is making you wonder – this is my interpretation.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like making you wonder, who is the man behind the mask? Who is Batman? Who is
the Batman?
And yeah, and you start learning a bit about him, and the way that the Riddler storyline ties into his family, I love. Like, I was just talking to a friend the other day saying my favorite Batman stories are the ones where Bruce Wayne is personally entwined with whatever Batman's dealing with. And they're very rare. They're not a lot of stories like that. Like The Dark Knight, you could take out a bunch of the Bruce Wayne scenes and it probably, you know, it might work a little bit. It might, you know, but like it sort of works without Bruce Wayne. You know, Batman does Batman, Bruce Wayne does Bruce, and a few things happen there and here and there. But I find the most interesting Batman stories, like when that ties into him. So it ties into like his mother and all that stuff. That gets me really emotionally invested and really excited.
That's what I was like waiting for. Like that would usually hit me really hard, but I don't know. There was a disconnect. Also really quick.
For me, I think.
No, go for it. Go for it. You go.
I think they gave me breadcrumbs. And then it led into it. And then for me, it sort of came. And the moment where I felt fulfilled, like I felt pretty happy with it. I was really interested in this new Bruce. But the thing that made me go was the moment where, you know, the whole movie, he never calls himself Batman. They just go, who are you? He goes, vengeance.
Vengeance, yeah.
And then at the end, when there's like a Riddler guy and goes, who are you? And he's and the villain is like vengeance, and he sort of realizes, what I'm doing, I'm not that different. Like for me, that like that single moment just completed the arc for me, and that moment was, it was like really, I thought it was really good writing, and that was enough for me to satisfy that itch for me.
I have a question for you guys. So, I was left fucking blindsided by the kiss. I'm so sorry, but where the fuck did this sexual tension come from? I did not pick that up whatsoever. Like, she didn't know his name. They barely had any conversations about him at all. I get Catwoman can be sensual just for the fun of it, right? Like, that's what she can be like. But what? Like, they kissed twice, implying that there's actually a romantic connection. I was way fucking lost on that. Was anyone else, like, felt that way?
So you go.
I kind of bought it. I thought they had good chemistry together. Because I remember you telling us, probably about a week ago, 80, that you didn't buy it or something like that. I thought the chemistry was good. Like, you know, it was all in the body language. I got it. Like it didn't seem weird to me personally. Okay.
She did kiss him with like they weren't talking, they weren't flirting. She was just, it was like, hey, what are you doing today? Oh, nothing much. The weather's pretty good. Yeah, kiss. There was no lead up, I feel, build up to it. So I sort of see where you're coming from.
Then at the she asks him to like run away with her, which is that's not a little thing to do. Like, that's pretty significant. And I just was like, I am so lost. Where the hell did this storyline come from? I don't know.
If someone said that to me on Tinder or something, I would be like, whoa, you're coming a bit strong.
Whoa, yeah.
But I guess they did just save Gotham together or whatever. I went in kind of expecting that to happen because that's what always happens with Batman and Catwoman. But I will admit, the chemistry wasn't super strong.
I don't know. I felt like the writing between them just didn't build enough of a foundation for even my sister was next to me. She was like,
yeah, it felt a bit forced. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit forced. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. You want to say something, Jesse?
No, no. Like, I bought it. So I don't know. I guess just different interpretations of their. Yeah. Oh, can I just say as well? I'd have to totally agree with Adi about. I've got to mention Colin Farrell as the Penguin. He almost stole the entire movie. He was so good, you couldn't even tell it was him. You really couldn't even tell it was him. He just disappeared into that role. And I love this scene. I just wanted to mention, give a special mention as well. Probably one of my favorite fight scenes of the whole movie is the very first major fight scene at the train station.
Yep, that was
you hear the footsteps. And the camera's just shot this like dark alleyway, but you don't see anything, but you just hear these footsteps and then he just like emerges. That was probably possibly my favorite scene in the whole movie. I thought it was so well done.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some moments of this film that legitimately feels like it's taken out of a horror movie, like some of the Riddler stuff, but also just especially in the first act, the Batman stuff, they really dive into the fear aspect that he puts on criminals. And I think it was the best. Look, throughout the whole film, did they really put it in well? Maybe not, kind of mostly in the first act, but it's the best way I've seen it done with live action. I really love that aspect to it. It's also my favorite live action Batman suit, I got to say. I think it looks great.
I did really like the suit. I really liked it.
It's really about Colin's performance as the Penguin. I remember before this, because they've announced ages ago, they're going to have two spin-off TV shows,
which seems so
excessive. And yeah, they said he was going to be, I think, a major part of one. And I was like, this is a bit much, isn't it? But after seeing it, I was like, I would watch that every week.
I would. That's watch it.
I don't know, man. They've made weirder spin-offs about even more relevant stuff, honestly. Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw today that they announced a Negan and Maggie from the Walking Dead spin-off show from the Walking Dead.
What?
I was like, what the fuck?
Oh,
like,
my Walking God. Dead,
just stop. Give it up. Seriously. Yeah. Like,
They just recently cancelled this spin-off, but they're going to do a TV show spin-off of Aquaman. I think it was called, like, Deep, and it was just about, like, the city of Atlantis or something. Oh, it was about, like, the Mariana Trench. I don't know. But, Aquaman wasn't going to be in it. And it's like, why are you going to make Aquaman show without Aquaman? No one cares. I'm sorry.
No.
You're not Gotham. Sorry. Sorry we're closed. Good luck next time.
The money. Show me the money.
Just give us Penguin. My last point. So watch the shit out of that.
100%. I think my last point I just want to say is I think the detective story stuff in this, so well written. I think, the pacing could have been a little bit snappier, but the way that it's got, it's this guy and there's this person and this one's corrupt and they're secretly working for this and who's the rat and the whole connecting the dots. It's the bet, I know Dark Knight, we always say that's a detective story, but this is like a real detective story. It's a detective story first. It's a superhero movie third. It's just not what you'd expect. Look, I love Matt Reeves. I know you complimented him some stuff earlier, but he made me give a shit about Planet of the Apes. That's how good he is. Mm. I always thought Planet of the Apes was the dumbest franchise. That was ridiculous. But when I saw the two he did, I was blown away. There are not many directors like him that can do a blockbuster that still feels like it's by a visionary, you know? It doesn't feel like it's on a conveyor belt when he does one. So shouts to him. His voice is very strong in this. And masterpiece is a strong word to throw out there, so I'm not going to say it, but it's very, very good. I was very happy with it. And but here's my concern. Don't know how the fuck they do a sequel.
Why?
I know there's a lot of characters that can go into. Because here's the they can definitely do a sequel. It's easy to do a sequel. But how are they going to do one that's going to be as interesting from the detective story perspective? Because every good story, you got two journeys. You got your physical journey and your metaphysical journey, right? Mm-hmm. Physical journey is easy. Maybe the villain is Calendar Man. He's killing people based on the dates, or it's Hush.
That would be
you
cool.
Go into the reporter storyline. Mm. Or maybe you got, I don't know, fucking Mr. Freeze and he's freezing people and they're finding frozen bodies showing up. That's easy to write. Easy peasy, break it in a day, we're done. But then how do you do what I was talking about before by tying to Bruce? How do you do that stuff? You could do something like there's the Court of Owls, which that storyline, the comics really goes into his parents and stuff. But like, I feel like they've already touched on that in this film. And I feel like they've already sort of touched on the history of that. So whatever they do moving forward, I just want them to keep up with this broken Batman. And I want them to tie whatever happens into him. Because the best heroes are the ones where they make their own villains. Like Iron Man's villains are using his tech and he's trying to stop them because he regrets that, you know, or something like that. So I hope they keep doing that. So I'm hoping we see more Bruce Wayne and...
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but...
I'm definitely not opposed to a sequel. Just, yeah, like that would be cool to see something more emotionally in depth that we have not seen before in any Batman films.
Yeah. And you know what? Make it shorter. It could have been a little bit shorter. I loved it, but no movie needs to be 3 hours. You could have done it shorter. All right, let's move on to our next review, the film discussion. I don't like using the word review. Film discussion for today. Adrian, you saw Licorice Pizza. Why don't you give us your quick thoughts and then we can jump into Uncharted.
Sure thing. Licorice Pizza.
What do you think of Licorice Pizza?
It was one of my favorite 2021 releases for sure. It basically follows Alana and Gary who grow up and sort of fall in love in San Fernando Valley in the 1970s in California. If for anyone that doesn't know what Licorice Pizza means, it's actually a slang term for a vinyl record because it's like a pizza made out of that looks like licorice. So it alludes to that, to the 70s sort of in one term, which is really cool. It was directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who has directed, I think, 9 of the band Haim's music videos, who is where the lead actress Alana Haim knows him from. And he just was really inspired by her and basically wrote this character for her. It's sort of like a bit offbeat, super energetic and so stylized, but not in an in-your-face way. Like everything was filmed almost as naturally as it would be in real life. Like there are scenes when they're walking in the street, it's literally in the street lights. Like there's nothing else there. So it's a very like raw feeling film, but it's incredibly funny. Both fresh-faced leads. So Alana Haim, this was her film debut. She is incredible. Like, wow, deserved every nomination she ever got. I'm actually sort of sad that she hasn't won. She should have. And her co-lead is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, Gary Cooper. I think that's his name, Gary Cooper. He was incredible. A lot of people gave it a lot of shit because of the age difference in the characters, but that is literally the entire plot of the film. So for anyone going into it that finds a way to be offended by it, didn't really even know anything about it before they went in, I just have to say like it in no way glorifies that age gap whatsoever. It's an extremely PG film. It's just basically about, you know, two awkward youths finding their way in life who sort of, he has a crush on her, they become friends, then business partners, a couple years goes by and they do like fall in love with each other. So I don't know, it's like a nostalgic look at a really carefree period and basically what it's like to be an awkward young person growing up in 70s California. And I really liked it. Really, really liked it.
I know, so there was another bit of controversy about some anti-Asian racist stuff in that.
Anti-Asian racist?
Did you have a take on that? Or
not that at character all.
Who's, no? No?
No.
Call that?
I literally, like, nothing comes into my head. I will really quickly say, though, as well, before I forget, Sean Penn is brilliant as playing like a complete Hollywood wanker in this film. And Bradley Cooper.
Bradley thought that Sean Penn would have been good as playing a wanker?
I know. No, he's really good in it. And then Bradley Cooper has this cameo for like 10 minutes. He also plays this like Hollywood nut job who needs them to install a waterbed in his house. He is just explosively funny in that little bit that he's got. He almost steals the show. Even watching it for that bit is so worth it. But the everyone's acting is just on fire throughout the whole movie.
By the way, I don't have anything against Sean Penn. I just thought it was funny.
Oh yeah, he plays an asshole. No, he's great at everything he does. Just turns to gold.
Cool beans. We have one last discussion for today, which all three we saw it together, didn't we?
We did.
I almost didn't go because I wasn't feeling that well that day, but I got in there just in time, mm-hmm. and we saw Uncharted. Starring Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. So, yeah, let's jump straight into it. Adrienne, I know you really enjoyed this film. Tell us about Uncharted.
I just thought it was a fun action flick. I've got no history with the video games. Before we saw it, I did do a couple of YouTube deep dives because I wanted to understand why the fans were so unhappy with a lot of the casting. And after watching it, comparing it to what they looked like in the games, I totally get it. But I mean, I don't have anything to hold on to. So for what it was, I enjoyed their chemistry and I actually liked the fight sequences and even the animation way more than I anticipated. I liked that it felt like you were actually watching a video game for a lot of it. And I just thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, like I'm not going to give it a 10 out of 10 and it's clearly about to become a 3-picture, you know, franchise. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Jesse, I believe you're on the opposite end of the spectrum for this, aren't you?
Yeah. This is easily the worst movie I've seen all year. Easily. Shit characters, shit script. Tom Holland, horribly miscast. I said in the TikTok he was horribly miscast. And what do you know? He was horribly miscast. I'm shocked. The only positives I could say about this film is it's always nice to see Mark Wahlberg in a movie. That's literally the only positive I could say about this film. I just didn't. And like as I've mentioned before, I'm not like a huge fan of the video games. I've played them. I've enjoyed them. I wasn't obsessed with them, but I did enjoy them. And I really wish, because I've mentioned this before, with video game movies, they're usually pretty shit, like this one is, and they usually only get one shot before they're not brought back. And if that was the case, they should have just bit the bullet and just gone for an actual Nathan Drake grown-up story with, you know, an older Sully, instead of doing this prequel shit. I know it's doing it for, like, franchise reasons because they want to make more sequels.
Jesse, did you really think, though, that they were going to have an amazing script, like, for real? Did you actually have confidence that it was going
to
be?
I didn't. Well, I wasn't expecting it to be the next, you know, classic, you know, Indiana Jones action flick. Yeah. But I thought they could have done so much better. They could have done so much more of this. I did not give a fuck about any of the characters. I thought the fight scenes are pretty shit, if I'm going to be honest. I thought, I will say the scene with the boats was okay. I didn't mind that. I thought that was all right when they're having the end battle on the boats. But everything else, I was just waiting for the time to tick away so I could leave and completely forget about this movie. I thought Tom Holland was playing Tom Holland, as we suspected. I thought the violence was weird. There's that scene where that one assassin girl kills Antonio Banderas, which I don't even know why the fuck Antonio Banderas even bothered with this movie.
Yeah, it was a bit
really
random.
He must have been like a really like, I really need money. Like he must have really wanted a good payday. But there's a scene where she kills him and she's literally like cutting his throat. But as she's cutting his throat with a knife, there's nothing there. And I was like, I think I turned to you, Matt. I'm like, Is it just me or did I just see that? Did I just see that? Like, she literally went across like that with his throat, like throat with the knife, and there's nothing there. There was nothing there. And then the next scene, he's on the ground. It's like a red line across his neck.
Oh, my God. I'm like,
that is so bad. I just.
The makeup artist was like saving. She didn't have much blood on the set that day. So she was trying to save whatever she had, using it very sparingly.
I'd put this on Venom 2 level of garbage.
Whoa. Okay, that's how bad I thought it was. Pretty bad.
Yeah, it's just trash. I'd rather just forget about the whole thing. And yeah. There you go.
Look, for a family-friendly four-quadrant blockbuster, it was harmless. I think it was all right. I was expecting it to be a lot worse than what it actually was. I walked out kind of being like, like it was okay. It did what it set out to do. It didn't try and reinvent the wheel. I feel like it was made with little effort, but when you have that much money from Sony being pushed behind it, you don't need a lot of effort. You just need a lot of money. And that's what it is. So yeah. Look, I think, let's talk about Tom Holland, to his credit. One, he is doing a lot of physical, I don't know if he's doing his own stunts, but he is doing his own fight scenes. And I was surprised by that because generally there's a Spider-Man mask on his head. So seeing him do a few, like, you know, dodging some punches and stuff, I was like, okay, that's nice. I don't think they were particularly amazingly shot or choreographed, but like they were doing, like they weren't using like 100 shots for stunt doubles or whatever. So credit to Tom Holland. He did his own fight scenes from what I could tell, and he did a good job of that. And I think I was surprised that, so I went in thinking he was just going to do Peter Parker. And I feel like he did it. He made an attempt to be something different. It just wasn't that different. Like, I noticed he tried to lower his voice a bit more on top of the American accent. And the directors tried really, really hard to age him up. Like, there's a lot of shots of him shirtless to show his muscles that he's gained. And fucking good on you, mate. You've got real ripped for this role.
Yeah.
They're always trying to, like, you know, make – oh, it's – look, there's a lot of scenes where he's, like, drinking alcohol. It's meant to be funny. But, like, it's funny when you have this, like, cowboy-type, happy-go-lucky, swashbuckling older dude where it's like, oh, he's an alcoholic, LOL. But, like, when you have someone as young as him doing it, it's like, oh, no, that kid's going to grow up to have a problem. Like, it's not as charming when you have someone that young doing it. But I think he was okay as a generic – action adventure lead. As Nathan Drake, no, he's nowhere close. Like he wore the same shirt at some point. That was it.
So that was the closest.
If I pretend it's not an Uncharted movie, I can go, this is an okay action adventure film. I'm not going to put it up there with Pirates of the Caribbean or The Mummy, but it does all right. Of course, a lot of the little puzzles and stuff they do are not going to make sense and they're going to be kind of dumb. There always are in those type of movies. If anything, they're successfully living up to the trope. What I don't think they were good at is they, with Uncharted, there are some long like shootout sequences and a lot of cool chase scenes and they're really big action set pieces and it's one after another and that's what makes it exciting. Throughout the whole movie, there's only like maybe two big action set pieces, but there was never like not too many shootouts, not too many. It didn't feel like Uncharted. It never felt like Uncharted to me. It just felt like an action adventure movie. And Uncharted, I think, is an action adventure movie as a game, but like because it's a game, they have a lot more long sequences of guns, especially. And we weren't really getting that. So I did never. As an Uncharted fan, I'm disappointed. But as a movie fan, I went out like pretty okay with it. Like I'd watch a sequel. I would watch a sequel.
I'd watch a sequel.
I think this director is probably my mortal enemy.
Okay, explain, elaborate.
Ruben Fletcher. He directed, first of all, Venom. So
no further explanation needed for Matt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he also did the two Zombieland movies, which I think are incredibly overrated.
I think number one's epic. Number two is good.
I
feel like they both set up a premise and fail to live up to it. Like they're like, oh, it's a movie all about rules. And then like don't mention it for like 90% of the movie. And it's like, that was the one thing that made your film unique and you just don't touch it, but whatever. And then he does Uncharted and yeah, it feels like a wasted opportunity. It could have done so much more with this franchise, but it's not unwatchable. I think it's
debatable.
Look, as someone who sees, like, I see most generic blockbusters that come out, and you know, with that have overdone CGI and all. I'm talking the non-Marvel ones. Most of them are pretty fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And this one was like the plot made sense. I didn't cringe. There was no point when I cringed that I can think of.
I had a cringe point.
There were some jokes.
I do have one really quickly need to mention. So I just wanted to like let you finish your turn. Yeah. Okay. I was sat next to one of our friends, Esther, and we were both highly confused about what nationality the main actress was, because I could tell she was trying to be Australian, but she wasn't. And I was like, is she British? Is she American? Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on?
So she was British.
Right. So we Googled this through the movie. Now the character is actually Australian. The actress is American, but her accent would go through Irish, British, American, Aussie, and Kiwi throughout the whole film. And me with my
Aussie.
My accented brain was having a field day trying to figure it out, because she'd be like, my father will hear about this. Yeah, bro, that's right. And then you'd be like, what the fuck is going on? It was really confusing the shit out of me. So that irked me the whole time. I thought she was actually like a pretty cool girl, like a cool like character doing her like action-y stuff. But the vocals were literally sending me. Like I just couldn't handle it. Yeah, that was my number one. That wasn't an
issue for me at all. Wow.
I didn't even know she was Australian. I had no idea she was supposed to be Australian. I thought she was trying to act British with like a fucking terrible British slash American.
When you buy the Blu-ray special edition and watch it again 10 times, you're going to pick it up.
I was sort of lukewarm on the romance element between her character and Tom Holland's character.
Did they have a romance?
They were trying to make it happen.
Yeah, they fucked. They had a sex scene.
No, they didn't.
Well, not a they sex woke scene, up in bed. But it's implied.
They went to bed. They had an implied sex. They had a deleted sex scene. They went to bed and then he woke up and she'd stolen something. So, like, I feel like I liked how they were sort of doing it. But, like, again, like, Tom Holland just is so young looking. I can't buy it. Like,
the sexual tension needed to be way higher, because it was sort of coming across that that's where they were going, but it wasn't a home run with that, I think. I agree.
Yeah, like it didn't ruin the movie for me or anything. But yeah, it did stick out a little bit. I was also a bit annoyed by – now, I got in the movie a little bit late, and I know it opens on the plane sequence, right? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I missed that coming in. But when I saw – when they got up to the plane sequence part, I was pissed off because they kept cutting away from it to show the shootout on the plane. Yeah. Like, don't show me that part. That part's not in the game. The other part is, did they show more of the plane sequence at the start?
They showed more of Tom. They showed Tom Holland's perspective in the plane sequence at the start.
Okay. I actually liked that.
Was that the best part of the movie? I feel like
I don't know. There's not really any good part of the movie.
I enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was a good way to open the movie.
Also, I just highlight the fact that I was right and easily guessed the post-credit sequence.
You did. I was waiting the whole movie. I was like, Matt's going to be right. And he was.
Yeah. One more thing I did like, actually. I liked the ongoing theme of trust and lies, and how, you know, Sully had to, you know, give up the gold so he could save Nate and blah, 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 all that sort of shit. I know it's a little generic. It's been done before, but it's stuff like that that separates the complete trash from the okay to me. Mm. It's the fact that, okay, you didn't just go, then the boat exploded, the end. You actually made an attempt at some sort of character development.
Yes.
And I know that sounds like asking for the bare minimum, but when it comes to some of these, like, fucking turn them out like butter, you know, on the conveyor belt type movies, sometimes you have to, you know, you don't get the bare minimum sometimes. It could be just another Transformers 46, you know? That's the stuff. Yeah. So that's probably why I'm not here like you, Jesse, just going, this is ass, fucking kill me. And that's what sort of kept me going, I think. But overall, any other thoughts or comments before we wrap this up?
If that's how you felt, that's fair enough. But to me, this was bottom of the barrel garbage. But anyway, if that's the way you interpret it, that's fine.
It actually made me
wondering. You did say this is the worst.
Go for it. The worst what?
Oh, well, you said this is the worst movie you've seen all year. It's got me wondering, what is the worst movie I've seen of 2022 so far? And I don't know. I might have to go back to you next week on that one. But yeah. So, Adi, you had a comment.
My final thought was that I actually wished I had played the games. Like, it made me want to play them, because for the parts that were good, and I love the whole, there's pirate ships involved. Okay. Like, of course that's attractive to me. But yeah, it made me wish I was more of a gamer, because I feel like if I enjoyed the film, then I'd really enjoy the games.
Yeah, like there were some like Easter eggs here and there where you get those little Marvel moments where you go, ooh, I know that thing. I get that reference. That looks like the thing I like.
Yeah.
And that's always a nice thing in these franchise type films. Anyways, that's it for us today here at Upcoming Attractions. If you want to hear more, be sure to check us out on Spotify or iTunes. A 5-star review on iTunes goes a long way and really helps promote the show and get us out there. So if you're feeling generous and you're enjoying the show, please consider a 5-star iTunes review. We love you so much. If you want to watch the show, be sure to check us out on YouTube and follow us on social media for highlights and more. Facebook Reels is a new thing. So we're going to be trying that out.
Facebook stepping up its game now, finally.
Yes.
Finally. Well, yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it helps bring the show to a new audience. But for now, the main place for all those fun clips is TikTok. Instagram.
It is a lot of fun on TikTok. Like, I love the comment wars that erupt. They're my favorite part. When people just agree, you know, that's also really sweet.
Yeah. Any form of, look, we're very lonely, so any form of interaction makes us happy. All right, guys, that's it for us this week. As always, we love you and we can't wait to see you next time. I'm Matt, that's Jesse and Adi. Until next time, laters.
Laters, guys.
Bye, guys.